There's a big difference between hiring somebody and extending an invitation. Because you always have to ask yourself, who would you like in your home? That's an invitation. You know, this was our home. And we wanted to be careful about the kind of people that we brought in. Who are the people that cared about other people? And as we grew, who are the servant leader that really contribute to our organization? Who are the people that had the ability to become servant leaders? So, you know, we were always looking for people skills first, human skills first. But what were their values and then their work skills second?
You made it to the Better Leadership Team Show, the place where you learn how to surround yourself with the right people, doing the right things, so you can grow your business without losing your mind. I'm your host and leadership team coach, Mike Goldman. I'm going to show you how to improve top and bottom line growth, fulfillment, and the value your company adds to the world by building a better leadership team. All right, let's go. Howard Behar's career in business spans over 50 years, all in consumer-oriented businesses covering several industries. He retired from Starbucks Coffee after 21 years, where he led both the domestic business as president of North America and was the founding president of Starbucks International. During his tenure, he participated in the growth of the company from 28 stores, yes, at one point, they were that small, from 28 stores to over 15,000 spanning five continents. He served on the Starbucks board of directors for 12 years before retiring. Howard is currently a trustee for the Sherry and Les Biller Family Foundation and is on the advisory board of Anthos Capital. He formerly served as board member for Starbucks, Gap, Shurgard, University of Washington Foundation, and ID Tech, to name a few. Howard is committed to the development and education of our future leaders and has been a longtime advocate of the servant leadership model. He has also authored two books on leadership titled It's Not About the Coffee and The Magic Cup. We are in for such a treat today. Howard, thanks so much for doing the show.
Thanks for having me.
So, first question I always ask is, in your opinion, what's the one most important characteristic of a great leadership team?
I think having empathy. Empathy for each other, empathy for the people that they serve. I think it's core to any great leadership.
Love it. And it's amazing. I've asked that question so many times now, and I very rarely get the same answer out of everybody, which tells me it's a pretty good question. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
So, obviously, we're going to talk about Starbucks a lot. I mean, I'm so honored to have you on the show with what you have achieved. You led Starbucks North American business for 21 years. And as I said in your intro, you saw the company grow from 28 stores to over 15,000. What was the company like back when it was 28 stores?
Well, it was early stage. You know, it was still believed that it was in the coffee business. And when I came in, I started trying to convince people that we were in the people business, serving coffee, not in the coffee business, serving people. And so it was typical entrepreneurial organization focused on the product or the service that they're selling and not really focused on the people.
Was there a vision even then to what it might become, or was there any vision?
Well, I think Howard Schultz had dreams, but even his wildest big dreams, I don't think ever could see what it's become. I was trying to escape corporate life when I went there. I thought, gee, this will be fun, a nice little coffee company, you know. And, you know, if it would have been probably left up to me and our the other leg of the stool, Arnold Smith, we probably had this nice little coffee company, West of the Mississippi. But we had no idea. And the better we did, bigger the dreams got.
What were back 28 stores thereabouts as you're scaling? And I'm asking this, most people listening are at the point where they're in their version of 28 stores and they've got these big dreams. So What were some of the challenges in the early days as you were growing? Either challenges to grow or the challenges that came about because of the growth?
Well, I mean, that's a long answer here. So, you know, you compete at all different, with all different things in companies. You compete for capital. And you compete in our business, you competed for location. And you compete for product. And primarily compete for great people. And that was always the biggest challenge, is getting the right people on the bus, as Jim Collins always says, have the right people on the bus, and getting the wrong people off the bus. But that was the biggest challenge, is as we were growing fast, we were adding people so quickly that, you know, it was hard to keep up with it. And we actually didn't catch it until the downturn came in 2007, 2008. But always the biggest challenge was having the right.
And with that challenge, what did you learn as you were going out and getting people? Were there techniques you learned, any kind of secrets you could share about how you went out and found the right people?
Well, you know, I mean, we were recruiting. We used recruiters. We did everything. I used to walk the malls and go into each store. And if I met somebody I liked, I'd give them my card. And I recruited hundreds of people that way. It was amazing. But that is always the biggest challenge, is that one. And you're not hiring somebody. You're inviting them to be part of your organization. You're extending an invitation. It's a big difference between hiring somebody and extending an invitation. Because you always have to ask yourself, who would you like in your home? That's an invitation. So, you know, this was our home, so to speak. And so we wanted to be careful about the kind of people that we brought in. You know, who are the people that cared about other people? And as we grew, who are the servant leader that really contribute to our organization? Who are the people that had the ability to change, become servant leaders? So, you know, we were always looking for people skills first, human skills first, values. What were their values? What were their human skills first? And then their work skills second.
And were there mistakes you made along the way in figuring that out? Or did you know right away that's what you were looking for?
Well, yeah, you made mistakes because you got in a hurry. You needed to fill a position. And so you short-circuited the interview process. We used to always have 3 to 5 interviews with different people. And some people would focus on the professional skills. I always focused on the people's skills. And who were they as human beings? But yeah, we made mistakes. We brought people in that had great resumes, and we didn't do a good enough job of figuring out whether they had the people skills. Almost everybody that failed at Starbucks, it wasn't because they didn't have the professional skills. It was always because they didn't.
So one of the big challenges was going out and finding the right people. If you could add a second one, what was another, back in those days, growing from 28, what was another big challenge that you had to grapple with?
Raising capital, you know, having enough money so that we had, you know, enough runway. And so we were focused on that too. And we did it. Back in those days, it was, I think, somewhat easier in some respects. But than it is right now, although there's a lot of capital. We had to raise capital. We had to have managing inventories, not letting our inventories get out of kilter with our sales. Because, you know, most companies don't go broke because they're not profitable. They go broke because they're profitable. I used to have this sign above my door that said, cash is king. And it's the same way in all businesses. So those were the primary things. Then, of course, getting the great location for our stores. But it's a myriad of things. It's not, look, it's retail is detail. And it's everything. What kind of napkin you have, the recipes for the drink, for the people that you have, having enough capital, the right location, on and on and on.
When it was 28 stores, did you all view the company as, we're a coffee company? Right? Did you view the business any different? Like today, it's, I think, common knowledge that it's more than coffee and it's about a place to escape, or I've heard the term a third place. How did you view the business at 28 stores? Did you view it as just a coffee company, or did you view it as something more than that?
You know, in the very first, it was viewed as a coffee. And that's, we wanted to be, you know, with her exact words, you know, but it didn't take very long. And I, particularly, I was so focused on it, I was relentless. That it was more important that we are a people company. And then, so we drove, we tried to drive that. But, and then over time, as we grew and we realized what our customers wanted, they wanted a place to sit, have a conversation. Now all of a sudden, I forget the title of the book, but it's called The Great Good Place. And it's the preferred place for home and work. And so we started focusing on that. We wanted to be the third place. So you come down, have a cup of coffee, have a conversation with your friend, your loved one, or even read a newspaper, whatever it is you wanted to do. So the view and the vision for it got bigger. We're still in the coffee.
Given the importance of people and finding the right people to people company, how did you, in all of that growth over the 20 plus years, how did you keep the culture of the company? Or maybe a different question is how did the culture change over that time, the company culture, and how did you manage that? Hi, it's Mike. Hope you're enjoying the show. If you get value from the ideas we talk about on the show and you want some help prioritizing what actions to take, I've got a great tool for you. It's called the Breakthrough Leadership Team Assessment. It's a quick 30-question survey that'll help you identify your biggest challenges and determine what actions will lead to the greatest results. You can take the survey at mike-goldman.com/BLT assessment, as in Breakthrough Leadership Team Assessment. That's mike-goldman.com/BLT assessment. Now, back to the show.
Well, like I said, we went from a coffee-centric or product-centric company to a people-centric company. So the culture was changing. And as dreams got bigger, the issues got bigger. So, but we wanted to stay close to what mattered most. And, you know, once we hit about 200 stores, we started to get stressed. One of the people that worked in the company, her name was Jennifer Behrman, and she was like the canary in the mine shed. She said, "We're losing our way. I don't know why we're here anymore. It isn't just about opening stores. It's about helping people be all they can be." And so we came up with our statement and guiding principles, and that kind of drove us. That became the roadmap. What we call it, our BHAG, really turned into our mission. We want to be one of the most well-known and respected organizations in the world. And so that really, I think, enhanced. Now we had a purpose bigger than ourselves.
And how did you take the BHAG and the purpose? How did you, since so many companies struggle with this, how did you cascade that down the organization and get the employees from the, you know, corporate offices and leadership down to the barista in the store? How did you communicate that message and get people behind it?
Every way we could. In those days, you know, there weren't what we're doing now. There was no Zoom. Computers were just starting to come out. So it was visiting the stores, and it was doing what we called open forum quarterly. I was inviting everybody that worked to come to an open forum. We would have about 15 minutes of conversation and about our dialogue, and then about 45 minutes of Q&A. And so you had to live the values. So we talked about the values consistently. Of course, everybody got their copy, but it was how you act. It was the decision you make and the actions that you took that really reinforced the values of the organization, close to the organization, because people don't care what you say. They want to know what you do.
Love it.
I believe you just keep repeating.
Shifting topics, I'm always fascinated by the inner workings of a leadership team. It's what I do for a living. I coach leadership teams, so I see a lot of them. Tell me a little bit about, you know, how Howard kind of ran, you know, from 28 stores or thereabouts, and then the growth. Were there regular meetings of the leadership team? How big was the leadership team? Did you do, you know, annual planning, quarterly planning? Give me a sense of how that, you know, how many people were on that leadership team? And was there a process and a rhythm of that team, or was it a little bit more haphazard back then?
Well, in the early days, it was a little bit haphazard, but it very quickly, as we are growing, it had to become more formal. So I had about 8 to 10 people that reported to me, but we met once a week. We would all get together every Monday morning, and we had these comment cards, both for partners or employees that sent in. And I would take about 50 of them, and I'd give 5 to each person. They had to read the comment card about what it was, and then we'd have a little 1-minute discussion on what we'd heard. And that kept us really close in touch with our own people and with the company we were serving. And then we were in the stores all the time. But nothing, everything happens in the store. And our job was to listen, not to go inspect, but to listen to the people, what was going on. And I had 3 questions always. What do you like about Starbucks? What don't you like about Starbucks? What would you change? The team had to be together. And so we had those meetings. We had quarterly meetings where we'd spend a full day going over all the issues, going over the financial results for the quarter. We did our planning. We did annual planning, but of course, we were constantly evaluating it month by month, even week by week, of what was going on and making adjustments as we moved forward. But it was constantly fine-tuning, being in touch with what was taking place in the organization. We're not waiting for something bad to happen, but trying to head off those before they did happen. That just requires a lot of listening, a lot of empathy for your people, with people, a lot of caring, a lot of love, a lot of inspecting what you expect, so to speak. It's being in tune with what was going on in the organization. We're just assuming everything was...
Which had to be harder and harder as the organization got so much bigger.
Oh, yeah. As we started to spread out city to city, state to state, and then when I started the international business, you can imagine that was like, we didn't hear common language, but we had to figure out ways to do it. And we did. And what I found is there was no substitute for human interaction. There was no substitute for being patient. As good as Zoom is, and it's good, right? There's no substitute for being face-to-face where I can reach out and talk.
And that's harder and harder today with so much remote and hybrid work.
But you got to get on the airplane and you got to go.
That's a great message. Not enough people are doing that today. How would you describe Howard Schultz's style of leadership?
You said me a pick, huh?
He's not listening. Don't worry. You could be honest.
Howard was driven, right? I mean, he had big dreams, and he was intense on accomplishing those dreams. And everything mattered. No detail was too small, from the napkin, really the design of the store, everything mattered to Howard. And so he was relentless about it. And he was tough to please. He wasn't always a happy camp, right? He was always fair. And, Howard and I used to argue like about lots of but
yeah,
he was a good person.
Howard, is there anything else when, the folks listening to this are typically folks that have small mid-market businesses and they've got dreams of growing. You talked about the importance of finding the right people. You talked about the importance of having capital so you don't run out of money before you could achieve what you want to achieve. Is there any other piece of advice you'd have for the leader who's listening that wants to scale their company?
Listen to your customers. Listen. And when you think you've listened, listen some more. And then take action on what you hear. You can't respond to everything all the time, but you've got to put it in the screen and figure out which things are the most important things to do, but you've got to get them done. And then I think, you know, it all comes back to people. If you've got the right people on your team, if everyone is clear about the greater purpose of the organization, if everybody's clear about what you're trying to accomplish, and if you hold each other accountable to your commitment, then you got the best chance of making it. But when you don't have the right people, nothing works. You know, you can have the best concept in the world. You can have the best idea in the world. But without the right people to bring it to life, it doesn't work. And leaders underestimate that. Entrepreneurs think, hey, they're the guy. They're the woman. They got it. They've got this. They can make it happen. But the minute you hire one person, now you're a people company. You know, and it's just focusing on that. And the nuts and bolts, you know, yeah, capital, paying attention to the details of the organization, but listening to your customers, listening to your people, and being committed to what you try to achieve. Understand that your job is a 24/7 job. If you're an entrepreneur and you think you got time for vacation, think again.
Well, I hope they have time for vacation, but maybe, I mean, are you literally saying that they shouldn't take a vacation, or just that they can go somewhere, but they're still thinking about the business?
Everybody's got to have time to recharge. I get that, all that kind of stuff. But understand that it's a 24/7 deal. If somebody calls you up that was working with you in the middle of the night and they got a problem, your job is to listen, right? And I always said, look, business was my day job. The people were my day job. The business was my night.
Love it. And that transitions, I think, pretty well to the next thing I want to ask you about, which is, I know you are a big advocate of the servant leadership model. I've heard that term many times, but I'd love you to describe for us, what does that mean? What is the servant leadership model? What does it mean, and why is it so important to you?
Well, I'm going to bring it down to its core. So there are three things that I believe a servant leader is responsible for. Number one, helping your people grow to be better human beings. In other words, help them find the pathway to becoming a better human being, making sure that they're living up to their own personal values and the organization's values. Number two, helping them become better professionals, better gain skills. Whether it's you coaching them or are you getting them some professional help when they need it. Number three, helping them achieve their own personal goals in their life. And so your job is to serve them and their journey. And so not all people stay with you forever, but those are three things that you want them to leave with. You want them to leave a better human being, a more skilled professional, and having achieved some of their own personal goals. So to me, that's the core of servant leadership. When you do that well, when you do those three things well, then they're going to help you achieve what you want.
Yeah, and I think many leaders have that backwards, right? They serve the business and they want their people to serve the business. But meanwhile, they're not really serving their people.
Right. Yeah. And that's not how it works. And, you know, people know the difference. You know, people don't care what you know. They want to know how much you care. You know, and that's where it starts, and that's what you got to show first.
So, Howard, how are you spending your time these days? You retired from Starbucks, did you say, was it 13 years ago? 13 years ago. So I know in the intro I talked about, you know, the boards you're on and things like that, but tell us a little bit more about how you're spending your time. I know you've got a couple of books, you've done some speaking. What are you spending your time on these days?
Well, I'm trying to get leaders to lead using the servant leadership as a model. They can call it whatever they like. They can call it transformational leadership. They can call it caring leader. I don't care what they call it, but the understanding that they're there to serve their, and if they do that well, then their organizations are going to grow and prosper. That's what I spend my time doing. I do a lot of podcasts. I work on another book, do a lot of speeches. I'm on three boards now still of that. Capital board, or small company board, and a family foundation board, and so that allows me to stay involved, you know, in the organization that I'm part of. But that's what I do. And I'm 79 years old. You know, I spend a lot more time reading and playing with my dogs and doing some traveling with my wife. But I could never retire. When they put the last nail in that box, I still want to be talking about servant leadership.
I love it. You and me both. I'm 58, so I've got some time. But to me, you've got the kind of quote-unquote retirement that I want, where you're still so passionate about a purpose and still so busy working on that. That's wonderful.
Yeah, well, why not? I mean, that's what we've got, you know. All we have is time, you know, and as you get to be 79, you realize the time is getting
shorter.
Yeah,
you may only have, 35, 40 years left. You got some work to do. You said you're working on another book. Give us a little preview. What's this book going to be about?
Well, I post on LinkedIn every day. And it's basically taking my top 100 posts and writing about each one of them because they all have stories behind them. So that's it. But the other way they can find out, I'd like to give your listeners my email address and my cell phone number. So if they wanted to reach out, they can. I'm slow to get back.
Cell number. Wow, you're gutsy.
206-972-7776. And my email address is hb@howardbehar.com. So, I figure if they're willing to listen, then I'm willing to listen.
Love that. Thanks so much for doing that. And we'll put that in the show notes. But, that, if nothing else, maybe I'll keep you busy. But Howard, this was amazing. It's such an honor to meet you and have you share, probably just a thin sliver of what you've learned over the years on the show. But, I always say, if you want a great company, you've got to have a great leadership team. And Howard, thanks so much for helping us get a little closer there on the show.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Better Leadership Team Show. If you enjoyed what you heard, I would be ever so grateful if you could rate the show and leave a glowing review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. And don't forget to connect with us on mike-goldman.com/blog, where you could subscribe to my blog, or at Mike Goldman Coach on both Instagram and YouTube. Sharing is caring, so be sure to spread the word to anyone you think might enjoy the show. And remember, if you want to build a great business, you've got to have a great leadership team.